Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
You're listening to Live from the Path.
Oh, yes, I am.
Dog on it.
Why do you sneeze like a little kitten?
I knew it.
What was that?
I knew I was going to sneeze.
Were you laughing because you knew you were going
to
sneeze?
No. I was trying to figure out what to do with it.
What to do with your sneeze?
Here's the deal. It's
and
like
you decided against...
Sneezes are like...
That's what you sound like when you sneeze.
They're like a lit firecracker, man. There ain't nothing to be done with it. Yeah, I knew it as soon as about 10, 15 seconds into the opening music that I was going to sneeze. And I'm like, I can't do anything about it. I was trying to get it to happen faster so that it would happen before I had to start talking. And I couldn't force it.
I know it seemed like I wanted to talk as much as we did about that, but I didn't.
There's something about your face that says, tell me more about your sneeze.
I do have an inviting face.
All right, Ben, moving on.
Okay, you're listening to Life from the Path.
Mike,
okay.
How do you sneeze?
I don't.
All right, fine.
Okay. That's manly.
I don't. Right. What?
Okay. Here's what we got going on the show.
You never see John Wayne sneezing.
No, that's true.
He's got true grit.
Not even once. Or Yul Brynner, for that matter.
Yeah.
Yul Brynner?
Yeah.
Who's that?
He was the Pharaoh from the Ten Commandments movie.
Also the king and I. Two. King and I.
Yeah, I got the joke. I got it.
Oh, I didn't recognize the joke in there.
Oh.
Okay, here's what we got going on the show. First of all, let's take care of some, let's get down to business. Marshall had a solicitation from the complaint line and says that his brother, as a police officer in Texas, ended up sharing coffee at the Sandra Bullock's house after some sort of domestic disturbance that I don't think was at her house. It was just
right,
in the neighborhood.
Right, across the street, right?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
With the Sandra Bullock?
Yeah, the Sandra Bullock.
I mean, she's A-list celebrity.
Does that beat biking with Billy Shatner?
Yes.
It's still brothers. It's not a direct connection.
Right, agreed.
But still,
like, Bullock a brother beats biking Shatner. With Bill Shatner is cool, but like sharing a coffee in the home of Sandra Bullock.
The home, Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not running into Sandra Bullock out in the wild and going, hello, Mrs. Bullock. I know this is probably something you get a lot, but I'm a fan.
Yeah.
This is like, hey, would you like to come and like sit at my table with me?
She probably made the coffee. You're drinking coffee made by Sandra Bullock. Did Shatner make any type of beverage or food?
No. Yeah.
No,
that's
probably
true.
Just a water bottle.
Yeah.
He got to use her wares.
Like a Star Bar or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the topper.
Yeah. I think that wins.
What if Bill Shatner had allowed Dan's brother to ride his bike?
No.
I mean, it would be closer
now, hold
to
on.
The
what
Sandra
if,
Bullock story, but I don't think it beat it.
If Willie Shatner brought that bike from home and didn't just get it for the ride, because I don't think he probably brought his personal rig. I think he borrowed a bike.
Oh. You know, that would have been cooler.
Yeah.
Like he had,
yeah, like this is the personal bike of Billy Shatner,
Bill's,
and I know
Bill's
that
throne.
Sure. Especially he shows up, he's like, you might think this is a rental, but nope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All mine.
Yeah, I think the Sandra Bullock story wins for
okay,
sure.
Okay,
yeah,
so agreed. Far, Marshall, you're the winner, and I may follow up. I think we should give you something, and so we're trying to figure out what to hand out. We lost our hat supplier,
but we won't like sign a shirt for you because that would lower its value.
Do we have a mug like a Life from the Path mug that would fit the coffee story?
We could do that.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, that's even better.
Okay,
okay. We're gonna talk. We're gonna talk, Marshall. Thank you for listening to the program. It made our week, and I'm glad you were so far the winner of the world's best celebrity story.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, here's what we got going on the show this evening. One, I want to talk about, is this wrong? Now, I know this sounds like, is this love, the video, the game.
Is this love?
No, it's not. That's wrong to do.
Okay.
That was a good example of something that shouldn't have been done.
Ah, got it. Okay.
So, the question is there anything where, like, as a man who follows Jesus, you think to yourself, you know, I believe this thing or feel this way or have this attitude towards something, and like, is that wrong? Like, you feel like it might be a borderline problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And I got a couple of them. I got a couple of submissions then.
Okay. Mike's got a couple. Boovy, you've been churning one?
I've been trying to, but I keep forgetting it.
Okay. I'm gonna give you, I'm going to drop one just so you guys understand, so you know what the tense of it is. I don't really think, I don't spend too much time, nor do I think it's all that important knowing how horrendous the crucifixion was of Jesus.
Like, as in, like, the visceral details or the pain or...
Yeah, I just don't... I think we over... I don't want to say overcook them, but, like, we spend a lot of time talking about that stuff. Yeah, and, like, I just don't know how important it is.
Like, he wasn't just killed. He was killed in this heinous manner. We've got the word excruciating from it, stuff like that.
Yeah, and so we'll talk about why I think that. That's my first submission, so we can talk about that. But, like, that's an example as a pastor of the Lord's service. I look at all the details that people often talk about in the crucifixion. I go,
Okay.
is that wrong? That's going to be the question.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, there was an article in the Christian Post, and the question is, what is the one question you should ask at any church?
Like the, every church owes you an answer?
Yeah.
Is this the premise?
Yeah. Like if you're trying to decide whether you're going to go there.
Oh, okay. Oh. Got it.
And this is, of all the questions that you could ask, this is the one. This is the one you got to ask.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll hit that one up.
Also, I'm going to disagree ahead of time.
What are your potlucks like?
No.
Oh.
No, that could be it.
Okay. You know, it could be. Here's the weird part. I don't like twice baked potatoes. And it's because I think they're gross, but I figured that the only time I've ever had them is at church potlucks. And there's no way that they're making them wrong. Like, that has to be the best place to get a twice baked potato.
Actually, here's the consideration. If you're getting a twice baked potato at a church potluck, they didn't bake it. They didn't cook it twice that day. They had cooked it once, like 4 or 5 days ago.
It's possible.
Did not use them all. It's leftovers, is what it is.
Mm. What about scallop potatoes? Same. I don't like scallop potatoes either.
No.
What?
I love potatoes. All forms of potatoes, except for twice baked and scalloped.
What do you have? Never mind. We don't need to get
scalloped. Scalloped is just how you cut it, right? That's it.
Well, scalloping is the way that you cut it and cooking it in like a cheesy, creamy sauce.
Yeah, how can that be bad?
I don't understand what you don't like about it.
But it is bad.
Is it because there's no like crispy texture to it at all? It's just straight, like cooked but not mashed
it's
potatoes?
It's like eating a limp handshake. That's what it feels
like. It's
like
eating a limp handshake?
Like, yeah, right. You licked the hand of a 95-year-old man with no strength.
Yeah, they gave you the cold fish, and then all of a sudden you're trying to eat it.
What's wrong with the two of you? What is wrong with the two of you?
That's right. Okay, so anyway, put the thought on it, like, one question.
You ever shake a hand of an older gentleman?
Yes.
And then you hold on to it a little bit longer, you're like, I'm looking to see if there's pulse here. Right, like, your hands are so cold. That you're like, I'm not 100% certain.
He might have died in your arms tonight.
It must have been something you said.
I'm always afraid. I'm not a stern handshaker. Like, some of these guys are trying to demonstrate how much testosterone they got, giving me the handshake. Like, hey, buddy. In fact, there was a pastor, I'm going to say acquaintance, I ran into like 6 or 7 weeks ago. And not only did he bring up, I had like a hole in my jeans. He's like, hey, man, like, nice hole in your pants. I'm like, how manly is that? The first thing you noticed was a hole in my drawers.
Yeah.
Gross. But secondly, this guy shakes a hand like the more manly of us, like the American Gladiator. He's the guy who wins the mountain.
Turbo.
Yeah. If he's going to squeeze my hand.
Wolf is coming for you.
I'm like, dude, like strength, like power in a man is strength under control, not unrestrained strength to show how much you can squeeze a man. And so, but anyway, I've often am not sure how hard to squeeze the hand of an elderly gentleman.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to cold fish him, to Mike's point.
Yeah.
It makes him feel like less of a feller.
Yeah.
He got cold fished.
You got to give him a stern.
Let me ask you two fellas. Is this actually something that you're thinking about when you're going to shake someone's hand?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You don't just shake the hand?
No. I shake a lot of hands, though.
Think of how many old fellas you've abused.
I don't come in for a power grip. I think that's not actually my move.
It's a skill, not a talent. I think the more often you do it, the more you just find the sweet zone. It's like driving without knowing what the speed limit is.
Yeah.
Like you automatically just kind of get there after you've been driving a while. A
lot of houses, I bet this is 25 to 35, will stay in there.
And you don't even think about it. Your foot just kind of, muscle memory is back to where it belongs.
Yeah.
I think handshaking's the same way. You just got to do it a lot. In fact, if you are wondering to yourself, how can I become get out of my amateur status as a handshaker? You just need to do more of it. Shake hands with the person running the register at the grocery store. Shake hands with all kinds of people. Every time the Amazon guy shows up at your place, give him a shake.
Yeah. Hey, buddy. Appreciate that package. Why don't you lay five on me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't do any of that.
Let's exchange palm sweat. We're close.
I'm gonna counter all that and don't do any of that. Okay.
How did you get good at it?
I don't know if I'm good or bad at it. I just shake hands. Like, okay. There's no thought process that goes into my mind as I'm shaking somebody's hand.
Okay, I want you to think about that advice Bubba just gave, and he's probably not even good.
Yeah, he grabs the wrist and then just shakes your whole arm.
Yeah, I go for the full forearm check like I'm a Viking, and I'm like, did you know the historical accuracy of this is that I'm checking for a dagger that might be underneath your bracer?
Actually, I don't know about people that they go in, this is more apt in church circles, but like they'll shake your hand and then they'll put their other hand on your shoulder. Like, that's weird.
Like a presidential power move.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't like hate it or anything, but I don't understand what to do once it's happened.
I mean, that's the same move you would do if you were going to knee a man in the funny bits.
Yeah, that's true. You're squaring him up. If you're about to give him the roadhouse, you would totally square him up that way.
Okay, Dalton, you walk in, you shake his hand, put your hand on his shoulder, and then knee him in the Ghiblis?
Yeah.
That's wrong.
I didn't say I did. I'm just saying that's why I'm wary of it. It feels like the same thing a man would do, or if he's going to kidnap you. Either way, I don't trust him.
I feel like any time I've ever done the second hand, it's been to try and comfort the person.
Yeah, it's but that's the thing. It's a power comfort move. You're basically saying between you and I am the more comforting person, and you're forcing your comfort on me, which I don't even want. Okay, I am again, uncomfortable with your comfort.
Is this something y'all think about that's if somebody aggressive. Puts their hand on your shoulder?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I think about that.
Yeah, I was talking about this actually with one of our kids in youth group about you specifically. Like some people have a thing where they're like, they go up to meet somebody and they're worried like, they get some real nervous because they're like, what if they don't like me or what if I don't like them? What if we don't vibe together or whatever? I said, Bubba does not, that doesn't cross his mind. Like he just rolls up to people and he doesn't think, I wonder what they'll think of me, right? He just goes up and just like has, that's it. It doesn't, like it's not part of the process.
Yeah.
I said, it's definitely part of my process. I wonder what they think of me, what I'm going to say, what my opening line should be, like how are we going to shake hands if that's what if they want a fist bump? Will I awkwardly change to it? And like all these things run through my head because I'm socially awkward. And like some people are just not wired that way. They just walk up and they're like, they have a confidence about the way that, even if they're not actually confident people, but when they go meet other people, they're not like super concerned about it. And some people just very much are.
That's crazy to me because like I think you are the more socially cool guy than I am in most situations.
Mm. No.
Yeah.
I'm super worried about all that stuff all the time.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, no, I don't have that thought, but I generally don't have a lot of confidence in myself, whereas you two are the exact opposite. Like you guys think, I think you guys have a better feel for yourselves internally, at least, that I would say. And I don't think you guys are that socially awkward.
I would say in general, I don't have, I don't find a compelling reason to be disappointed or wary of myself, but I am wary of other people.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, you should have seen, like, for example, my wife wasn't feeling well this week. And so I said, okay, and the kids had a dentist appointment. So I'm going to take the kids to the dentist appointment.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's no problem, right? Well, I take the kids out there, and then they go in there, and they do their cleaning, and then they get seen by the doctor, dentist person. And the dentist person says, hey, we need to talk to you. Come back. And I'm like, oh, no, this is going to be horrible.
Oh, boy.
And they're sitting there, they're explaining these things. They're like, your kids, something or other, blah, blah, blah. They need to do this. And I'm like, I'm going to be real honest with you. I'm going to stop you right there. I'm not the button pusher at my house. So, like, you should write this all down in some kind of estimate or whatever you think the problem is. But, like, all the things you're saying.
What do we need for the body?
Not only do I will not be enforcing, I don't even know half the products you're talking about. And, frankly, like, it seems like you should be yelling at the kid. I don't know why you're telling me, right? Like, if they're not brushing or flossing right, like, why are you talking to me? You should just be like, hey, look, you're not flossing right. Child, you're like 14 or 15 years old. You're responsible. But she's telling me like I'm supposed to do something about it. I'm like, I don't know. Like I can talk to him in the car and be like, look, you embarrassed all of us at the dentist, right? We all got yelled at. Not only did you get embarrassed, like did you get talking to, but then I had to come in and get a talking to.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't deserve any of this.
Things I need to be prepared for as I try and become a dad.
I reference that to the children most of the time. I said, you better clean up the place over there. You're going to get us both in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. Doctor's like, listen, this is imperative you do blah, 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 blah. I'm like, I don't know if it's imperative.
Oh, crap.
And then I got in the car and promptly told the kids, like, look, man, if you go to the foot doctor, they're going to come up with $10,000 worth of footwork you need to do. I said, you go to the heart doctor, they're going to be like, you need to get rid of all this and this and this. The dentist is the same way. So here's the deal. You get a finite amount of money, and then you start doing some weighing. And you go, what can I afford to do? Like, because
new heart valve, new teeth.
New teeth. You know what I'm saying? We're going to go heart valve on that one, you know? And so I said, just be careful as you get older. You're going to go to specialist. And like, is this lady very good at her job? Yes. I find her to be super intelligent. Uh-huh. She's probably right about everything she said. It'd be sheer arrogance to be like, I don't believe that. You know what I'm saying? She's a dentist. You know, like, I believe everything she's saying. But truth of the matter is, I mean, like, if you breathe out your mouth, I don't know if we're going to, you know what I'm saying? We're going to have some kind of $10,000 surgery so we can get the breath back into the nose like they're supposed to. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know, man.
God gave a couple options. I'll just use one predominantly.
God gave a couple options is the greatest way to put that.
Anyway, what were we talking about?
Okay, so the question you ask at the churches.
Handshake. Oh, yeah, okay, do that one.
Okay, the premise, they said the unexpected question to ask a church. But then they just said, some of the best learning experiences a leader come when you ask a good question and listen. After 25 years of researching churches, I found one question more than any other seems to get people talking. And the question is, what gets your church most excited?
I hate this article.
Ugh. Let me ask you this question, fellas. What would be an answer of which you would like to hear?
What gets your church most excited?
Yeah, yeah. Now here's like let's just presume that almost like a bunch of the churches are going to go Jesus,
right?
And you're going to go, eh? Is that wrong?
Yeah, of course not.
Okay,
we're going to go. Yeah, I'm excited that you're excited about Jesus, the gospel being preached.
Yeah. Is that different? That one feels different.
I feel like mine's people get baptized. Our church gets pretty excited about people getting baptized.
Yeah.
But we also don't like, but here's the thing, is like they have big old churches who are running baptism once a month. They're running 50 people through there or whatever. And like we get a couple and we're like, yes, it's going to be great.
We clear the calendar.
We're not doing anything else. It's only baptisms. That's it.
I feel like the answer I would want to hear the most is like we take care of babies. Like we adopt babies, we take care of babies across the world. We help foster babies. We, you know, do all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Like you deal with the little children well.
Yeah, so what gets your church most excited? And if they said, we're in the world to take care of babies.
Would this question be helpful to figure out, like, what elbow, hands, feet, whatever, that God has your church doing? Mm. Is that why that's a helpful question? Because, like, there are churches that are, like, they're organized for missional work. They're right. Organized for homeless super outreach. So, like, you know, they don't try to put their hand in every bucket. They're like, we know what God's got us doing. It's X.
Yep.
You know? And so, like, if God doesn't have your heart tuned to that, then you're like, okay, I love you guys. This is not my place.
Right.
This is not my people, my village. And yeah, so, is that why that question's a really good question? Because let's just assume all the other boxes are ticked, right?
Yeah.
They are preaching faithfully out of the Bible. You know, they love Jesus, and they hold Scripture in high regard, and, you know, they love the world. Yeah, they love the people.
Milk to meat.
Right? So, like, yeah, I suppose if you take all that other stuff out of there and go, like, you know, what the better question would be, what does God have your church doing? Like, what does God have this community doing?
And is there a thing? Is there a specific thing? And often there is. And what's interesting is oftentimes it's related to the passions of the pastor.
Yeah.
They're passionate about it, and then other people come along, which is a good leadership thing.
Right. Get them fired up.
But like, would I was trying to think of whether like at our church would we be able to answer that? Baptisms, I think, is right. Like we would say yes, we get jazzed up at baptisms. Is there a specific thing our church is to do? Probably not, actually. Like, we're scattered. We're a group of randos. We're like, God seems to be doing different things through different types of people. So it wouldn't be one thing, which from my perspective is just as good an answer as any.
Agreed. Just feet moving.
Yeah, it is an interesting conversation, though. It's the same thing you would ask yourself personally. Is there something unique that God is doing through me? Mm-hmm. That I need to respond to, as opposed to just like you could do anything, which of course you could. And as a church, as God set you up in such a way that you get to do, like you would best be served to go be part of this type of service or whatever,
right.
Whatever goes on in the church. Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting question that probably it's unfair to be boxed in by a single answer, but it is an interesting conversation to see what people would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any answers if somebody said it to you, you'd go, thank you very much, but I'm going to be heading down the road.
Church attendance.
Yeah.
Excited? What if they said when new people are here?
That's a different thing than when all of when we see more and more people showing up.
Well, yeah. Or if they said, we want to get more people in the door. And I don't know. I don't think that would probably tick a box for me.
Like, I understand the concept of why a lot of people would take that in and go, yeah, wouldn't you want more people in here because we're showing people Jesus and that means that more people are listening to him? But I think that that's not actually a lot of the times that equates to. It turns into a numbers game.
Okay.
Well, and it just doesn't seem that that runs in line with what I've heard.
So as a parlay maybe into the question thing, mm-hmm. like, is it wrong to think that, like, if, like, God will send people, like, the thought is like, you don't have to actively try to gain people in your church congregation. God will send them. Is that wrong to think?
No, I don't think it's wrong to think, but it also is probably not a complete thought. Like, so God, I think God will send them, but like, I generally think that God is not sending people into situations of which are not beneficial for them.
Right.
Right. And so some of it does depend not on necessarily your evangelism, but on your obedience and faithfulness. And it doesn't mean God will not send them somewhere else
right.
or otherwise handle with them differently. Right. But like, I do think that the it's a faithfulness to God is attractional. And it attracts people in the same way which we could say God will send them, or God will draw people to follow him within certain groups of people because they are otherwise behaving in a way of which points them back to Jesus. Hmm. And so it's not that your behavior doesn't matter. It's just that your psychologizing, your salesmanship, your marketing budgets, that kind of stuff I'm less concerned about than I would be about your faithfulness to Jesus and its expression in your everyday life.
Right.
I do believe God will send the people.
Yeah, because what we're saying is like, because God tends to use humanity to do good things in his world.
Yeah,
right. Like, your behavior does matter, your actions do matter.
Yes,
but like, when we're talking about selling it as if it's a thing, that's probably less important. I would put that on of no importance. Like, I would rather print out no pamphlets, no Facebook announcements, nothing, and just go. God will send people based on our faithfulness to the good news and the way we live our lives, and just watch that play out.
Yeah, I think the risk. It's not that some of that stuff can. Well, it can work, but it depends what you mean by work.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, like, if through some other non kind of relational means you pulled in, let's say 100 people next month. How many of those people are actually going to stay at the church and are interested in a relationship with Jesus, or otherwise just wanted to meet people in the community or whatever they were compelled to come to do?
Right.
And there's a use of your time and resources for 90 people who aren't going to stay, and maybe 10 do, and maybe that's – I mean, 10 is still great, but like, is it possible God would otherwise have just handled the way that those 10 interact with churches through no budget or whatever? I don't know. Here's the thing is that like it would take – you would never be able to try it in isolation, the same way you can't test communism or pure capitalism. Like, we just don't – we're not in a situation where you could actually see it all the way through to be able to say. And can God do whatever he wants with even a poorly worded pamphlet? Well, of course he can. It's the problem with all Christian behavior is that, like, well, it works, didn't it? Like, it worked, didn't it? And, like, I don't know. Like, of course God could work through whatever fallible offering you have, but, like – how much of it reflects a human initiative and inertia, and how much of it reflects just faithfulness to God and letting him handle the ends?
Yeah, it's not like as soon as the Ethiopian eunuch thing happened that they were out, you know, trolling the forests hoping to find another broke-down dude, you know?
Right.
Maybe we could talk to this guy.
Actually, I was running through my mind from earlier is that if I think about the book of Acts, how many of those – were they being super intentional about any of these behaviors? Like you know, the people getting flagged down on the road. They were teaching in a house. Mm-hmm. They were talking at the temple like they normally would.
Yeah.
They're on their way to the gate, to the temple, and they see the dude at the gate. Like, they're all just like normal. None of these are like set up events per se.
They're just
places where they normally do things, hang out. Now, just like Jesus was willing to set up shop and teach in the temple, like that is, it is an event. Like, if a current pastor just decided to set up shop at a college, like it would be a similar type of thing. There isn't any like, hey, we set up an event,
right?
And people came or didn't came. They just did the thing, or they heard another event was going on, and Paul goes, hey, I'd like to speak at that. I wonder if they'll let me talk to him.
Yeah, I think they just showed up where people were.
Yeah, they went about their daily lives and then interacted. Like, they didn't back away from interacting in society as it happened.
No,
And so I don't know. Like it seems like a very like we have to be super. I in my mind I don't do those things naturally. I don't go. I don't interact in outside stuff very naturally. I have to be intentional about doing it, and so all of it feels like a put on to me. Versus, but not like an event type of thing, but just a hey, would I walk into some event where someone was talking about worshiping some other god? Would I feel it natural to walk in there and go, hey, can I offer Yahweh into the conversation?
I have a thought.
That would feel or even you know, Paul talking about in the Garden of the Gods, you know, like mm-hmm. talking about all the Greek religions and stuff. Like again, I think it takes a certain type of dude to be able to be part of that kind of thing. But in general, I don't know. It's like would it work if we just stopped doing all of it and just did the following Jesus part and did like no marketing, no events, no nothing. Would it work?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Interesting. So we're going to say it's not wrong.
It's not wrong. It's not wrong. I think it's not wrong, and it takes all kinds.
Yeah, agreed.
But I would be cautious on how many things like, well, yeah, we're just throwing it out there, but like God will do what he wants with it. I mean, yeah. But like, wouldn't I rather just default to God will do what he wants with my faithfulness, not God will do what he wants with my innovative idea.
Right.
To try to get more people to arbitrarily show up here.
I bet people will show up more likely if they see us at car washes.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. And like,
we've
again,
all got the same shirt on.
People's hearts are good. People's intentions are good.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to be cautious here about overdrawing a line about – I'm not sure it's wrong. I'm just not sure it's not the only way to go about it.
Well, and I think it's also – it's a different understanding of what church is. Like, are we drawing people to the building for the event, or are we out in the world as lights for Jesus? Mm-hmm. Like, I think those are two different concepts that I've seen churches get right, and I've seen churches get wrong.
Yeah.
And so, like, it really is understanding what your responsibility is, trying to find what God's got you doing. And a lot of the times, like, you don't have to go on a giant, like, worldwide mission trip. You can figure out that you're at the same come and go every week, and, like, you run into Steve. And, like, maybe that's where Jesus has you being a light. And, like, mm-hmm. that is where that work comes from. There's no marketing team. There's no pamphlets. There's no nothing. It's just you're in the same place, and that's the circle that you're next to.
Yeah, it does. It is interesting to think about just like you live your life like you live your days.
Yeah, right.
You grow the church like you grow your relationships. And so, mm-hmm. like, again, as opposed to thinking that someone else in the machinery is making disciples, like if everybody just kind of made disciples in their own corners, like then there would be disciples being made.
Right. Very rarely have I heard the whole – I mean, I've been doing this – trying to figure out this Christianity thing for almost 20 years now. Since I was a kid, and like very rarely do I hear stories where God just flat out, like no conversation with anybody else, they see marketing materials or they see a sign and they're just flat out brought to the building. Like that happens. I've heard that happen before where somebody's like out driving drunk and they see a sign and they just go, man, I got to be there. And they walk into a room and there's a pastor there and they're able to get that connection. But like a lot of the times, like it's not marketing. It's just, it's Jesus's people being out in the world.
Yeah.
And like, being light, right? Being salt kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm out there and people see that.
Yep. Okay. All right. So all right, let's flow in then to is this wrong? So my is this wrong? The amount of detail that we often talk about and even show, so think Passion of the Christ. Think mm-hmm. the things that maybe get taught in churches on Good Friday.
Yep.
And it's just the kind of excruciating, violent detail about Jesus's crucifixion.
Mm-hmm.
And so my caution, I suppose, is that like, it's not that I don't understand it. And I think there is some relevance to it. Like I get it, but oftentimes what we're trying to do is go like, do you realize how much he suffered and died for you?
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's, but what it pits is, like the earthly suffering that he took on your behalf, that like you totally belong to you, I guess. Although, I mean, you weren't a rebel against the Roman government or the current Jews. There's plenty of people who died who didn't die that way. There's also plenty of people who died who did die that way who weren't Jesus.
Right.
And interestingly enough, the Bible does not go into very much detail about it. So there is detail that we have. Like, we know the whipping, we know the crown of thorns, we understand the crucifixion and the wine. But, like, that level of detail, like, excuse me, there's a lot more detail in other biblical stories that aren't like the crucifixion.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that we've had to know historically, which I think is good for context. But it almost feels, I think it can feel manipulative to me. Like, don't you owe it to Jesus to believe in him because of what he did? And I think that frames your relationship with God incorrectly. There are parts of it which otherwise helps you understand your own shortcomings and the repercussions of it. This goes to a conversation we were having, I think, before the show started around thankfulness. And one of the things that was occurring to me is, like, we were born wealthy in the grace of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
I have never known a period of time of which the sacrifice of Jesus was not known to me and available in my life. And I cannot even give it up to experience for a while to come back to recognize that I'm so blessed.
Yeah.
Like someone who grew up with $1 million. You could take their $1 million away and make them live on their own for 6 months, and then they're like, now I really understand how lucky my situation was, or fortunate I was, and so I'll appreciate and use my money wisely. I cannot give up the grace of Jesus in any way to experience it without it. Mm-hmm. And so, like, we are simply blind, flush, and rich with the grace of Jesus, and so it runs the risk that we're not thankful. We don't feel a level of thankfulness because we're used to it.
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, like, is it wrong that I don't feel either, like, super emotionally connected, nor that it is all that important to go into extensive detail about the violence behind Jesus' crucifixion? Is that wrong?
I here's the thing, is I think that it's a cultural thing. Because we're largely desensitized to most things,
mm-hmm.
right? And so, like, I think that we've been leaning in on the violence, thinking that, like, because we can't feel the heart weight, you know, of the weight of our sin, and once again, because we've always had the riches of the grace of Christ, right? And so, like, we don't feel that. And, like, we were talking about that before the show a little bit, is, like, I feel slightly guilty that, like, I don't have this big buildup to Easter, and, like, it is a great celebration for me, and, like, I do realize the celebration, but I don't, like, feel this weight. Like, I almost asked God to put the weight on me so I would feel, like, the weight that's been taken off, and, like, he won't do it. So as much as, like, I it feels like you're getting away with something, right? Like, I understand the implications of Easter and resurrection from the dead and the clearing of my sin debt. And, like, I know what it feels like to be loaded down with sin, and then what it feels like to have him take that off of me. That feeling I know. But, like, as we approach Easter, of the one defining moment that we use to point all to the cross and go, this is what makes this this. You know, like, that big weight doesn't show up. And so I think we've been pressing in as a culture into the violence part, thinking, like, maybe we can feel it this way.
You shock it out of you.
Maybe you can, right, realize how bad this actually was. Because, like, the thing that is the most appalling about all of that is that, and like, this works for me, and maybe it doesn't, it won't seed any ground for you, but, like, I just keep thinking about Jesus coming down into an ant farm where the ants rebel against him for trying to show them how to build tunnels and move the food. You know what I'm saying? Like, he makes himself the creator of the ant farm, like, creates, like, shrinks down and goes, they're struggling. I'm gonna help them figure this out. Only to have them completely turn on you and kill you for trying to show them how the ant farm was designed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and, like, I find that, like that I can sit in and go, that's, like, outrageous.
It's
and
appalling. Yeah.
And like, it's just so ridiculous, and, like, it paints human sin so correctly, you know, and the fact that, like, that he died and defeated death, like, that's the big bell ringer, not how he got there. Now, granted, how he got there was rough, but, like, it was rough anyway. Like, his own creation, right, is turning on, yep, him in complete blindness.
That was his heartbreak.
Like, where he approached it with nothing but generosity and like, attempt for freedom and clarity. And to watch your own creation, like, with vitriol, like, just mow you down, hate everything you say, slander you, say everything you say is a lie, like, just that is appalling, mm-hmm. you know? And so, but, like, we just don't feel that well, you know? So I think that we've centered in on the violence, going, well, there's a cat of nine tails involved. It's got razors on it. Right. You know, and so we're like, can you just feel that? Can you feel that? But here's the thing is like, our culture is past that too, right? Like we have, like if you find people 25 years ago, there's a good 75% of the population. If you said, you get in a fist fight in high school? They're like, yeah, I've been in one, you know, at least one of them. That is not the same numbers anymore. We're not a conflict society anymore. And so like that doesn't, I don't think that rings the bell either. Yeah. So now it's almost gratuitous, you know?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Buva, did you have a, is this wrong?
No, I don't think so. I think that I would echo a lot of the things you guys are saying is ultimately, we have made a drama out of like the gore of the sacrifice. But like, if I just find out that the lamb was sacrificed, like that should be powerful enough that it took on things that it didn't need to. And it was pure and it was unblemished and all those things like mm-hmm. that has power in and of itself not to know. And I don't need to know how the lamb was slaughtered. Like just to know that a perfect being and a sinless and blameless thing took on all sin, all blame, all of that for us is a powerful message and doesn't need to be backed up by you know, visceral things.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Mike, you touched on this a little bit is the murderous intent and the gore of the moment was not the most powerful thing or the biggest offense against Yahweh. Like that, Yahweh had been offended for thousands of years by this point in time, by this same peoples. Like he knew what he was going to have to do all the way back into Genesis. Like you've got the situation with him and Abraham. Like he knew he was going to have to be the one to take on the consequences of this covenant that he knew his people were going to break. And like his, I've heard of the concept of God's heart being called like his gift house, like the house that he gives beautiful things from and stuff like that. Like that had been broken by his people for years because the gifts that he had been given had been trampled upon. Mm-hmm. And like the blessings that he'd give them had been stomped upon. And the people that he put forth, his prophets, and all these different things that he did for his people and delivered them from so many things, they had been perverting that and spitting at him for forever. And so, like, to take in the whole span of that story up to that point, that's more impactful to me than is the nature of the murder that was placed upon Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. All right. Well, okay, Mike, did we hit your example then? No, what's yours? Is this wrong? That's what you...
I have a couple.
Okay, yeah. Let's hit with one.
So wait, your answer was, I think we're saying no. It's not wrong to think that like we might be over cranking on the physical violence part.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Mine's going to be completely one-sided because these are things that I would like to do.
Appreciate the honesty of that.
So my question is this wrong? Like, can I love and follow Jesus all of my days, maintain a slight potty mouth, and continue chewing tobacco? So here I can play on both sides of this coin, right? Because like this is not foreign to me, right? Like if someone came up to me with the same question, I would say, like, you have the same freedom in having the potty mouth as you do in not having it. So if it causes someone to stumble or look at the gospel differently, why would you keep it? There's not really a good reason to keep it,
right?
You know. And as far as the, like, let's just put it in the line of, like, smoking, drinking, chewing tobacco, let's say occasional casino visiting or whatever. Like we're going to call them the almost the comical vices, right? Like, the one, if they want to set an example, they're like, gambling.
The Bible even say not to gamble?
No, I don't think so. I think it comes from money.
Like, I mean, I've believed this for a long time, but now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, because I've had this conversation before. I was never able to find anything because I was like confronted by someone that it was sin.
While you were at the casino?
No, just somebody found out that I'd gone to the casino before and it really irked them.
Oh.
And like they were like, you know, gambling is a problem. Like that's absolutely against God. And
it's a quick Google on it. Say, ask if does the Bible have gambling as a sin?
Yeah,
because I can't think of anything. I'm trying to think if I can think of any of Yahweh's people that would draw straws.
I mean, I think
or cast lots.
I think 70-30 meat from the Walmart is also a gamble.
There's all kinds of gambling. Like you driving, that's a gamble. There's other people out on the road, you know. So okay, Boob is going to look this up.
Okay, yeah.
So. Yeah, as far as the chewing tobacco thing goes, or smoking or drinking, gambling, whatever. So once again, I think if it owns you, the answer is, yeah, Jesus died to offer you freedom. And that includes freedom from even a thing that appears good.
Yeah.
Right? As soon as the thing turns into a slavery and it owns you and is chaining you, then like it's not a freedom anymore.
Yeah.
And so like if I was going to self-diagnose, I would go, look, does the thing own you? And I'd say some days, yeah, probably. And then some days, no, I just like it. There's like my soda drinking or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And so can you, because I've seen people do this is the reason I'm asking, right? Like I've seen people who like they have this thing or this habit or whatever. And like the grace of God in their eyes is not in their lives because they screwed up and bought six Cokes today.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they, or whatever they did. You know what I'm saying? Six Cokes or a pack of smokes or whatever they do. You know what I'm saying? And so my question is it wrong to think that you can keep, as the world would define it, as an unhealthy habit for all your days? And is God, like, is it implicit that God is trying to free you from that? Or does he go, I don't know, I created tobacco. Have one. You know what I'm saying? Like, does it own you? Right? Do you worship it? Does it, is, right. Are you running to it during stress? Or are you running to it as your peace? Then that's problem, right? Like, or like, are you trying to get joy from it? Because it doesn't offer that. But like, God also knows that like chicken is delicious, and you know what I'm saying. And like a nice warm meal is a comfort that He put into this world that you don't worship, but you sure want.
So was more wine at the wedding.
So was more wine, right, at the wedding.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that a lot of these things get bucketed under your body as a temple, and so you know. Are you treating it like you would treat the temple? Oddly enough, the reference tends to be people thinking about, do we keep the church itself clean? Like, what do we mean the body? The temple was dirty. Like, I don't know what to tell you. There were like hundreds of thousands of people there during the Passover feast. And like,
it was like cleanly
the fair.
Society.
It was like the Iowa State Fair after, right, one night.
Lots of animals.
There's birds crapping everywhere. Right, like, yeah. This is not a clean place. I mean, yeah, the Holy of Holies for sure. But like God dwells among you, and like He's offended by the Twinkie, I think is the perception. I think it's wrong. I think it's a wrong way to look at it. I think you got the right things. Does it own you?
Right.
Is it stealing things from you?
Like your health.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you could put those things in the bucket.
You could, but like you could also like your health. Remember like everyone will tell you that some of the context of the New Testament story of the prodigal son is that the elderly man, or not the elderly man, the dad doesn't run. It's crazy that he runs. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, that's cultural. The man never runs. You know what, right, I'm saying? He does not exercise. He gets old enough, and his children who can work the land, and he does not do a bunch of physical labor. It's dishonorable for him to be doing a bunch of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, he also could probably live longer if he continued to do physical labor, if he jogged a few miles every other day, if he didn't have a Mediterranean diet primarily focused on olives, and like all kinds of things. So there always is a potential imbalance. But think about it this way. Depending on where – ignore the convenience of how easy it is to get food and tobacco and stuff around the world now.
Mm-hmm.
Take 1,000 years off the clock. You were stuck with whatever you could eat, where, right, like that was local to you,
mm-hmm,
right? And so like think about the mix of foods available to like certain peoples, especially during certain times of year at around certain parts of the world. Like they did not have a balanced diet. It wasn't even possible to balance your diet. There's certain parts of the world like they subsist almost primarily on grain. Like, right, they're barely touching a vegetable. And so I like our concept of what it is to serve God cannot be explicitly bound by our notion of health that is new as of the last 40 years and our ability to get food around and bananas out of season delivered to my household,
mm-hmm,
or whatever. Same thing similarly, like there are plenty of cultures who've like been using tobacco forever, right?
Right.
Is that the primary thing that's killing people? No, it's actually the stuff we put in, the poison. And so like you openly going, yes, I continue to ingest poison, it's selfish is the problem.
Yeah.
Like it's a self-centered thing to go, yes, but I like it and I don't care the impact to my family or friends, mm-hmm, or the stuff that I could, good things that I can do in the Lord's service here, because I just like poison. Okay, that's a mistake. So I think it's wrong just fundamentally to have to go, do I have to give up things that aren't sin, but they are known as vices because they could be misuse of your time or harmful to your body, because I think you can get super legalistic about it. Mm-hmm. However, what I would say is, I would certainly pray on it, and you better gosh darn well have them on the table and say, right, hey man, like if you're asking for the tobacco, it's yours. Like it's gone directly. Because if it's an idol, if I reach for it as opposed to you, mm-hmm, if I misuse it, if I'm like spending 30% of my family's income to go gamble or on alcohol when there's other places it should be doing good service, right, into the world.
Yep.
Like they tend to be balance problems. They tend to be Holy Spirit inquiries, but not, I don't think it's wrong that they exist.
Yeah.
Even the six Cokes.
What about the swearing?
Actually that would have been another one in my bucket, is that like, swearing is a cultural thing.
Yeah.
What we even determine is a swear word is largely agreed upon by groups of people, or disagreed upon by groups of people.
But they tend to point towards unsavory things or unsavory attitudes.
Yeah, and so like this is where I would draw is it depends on which word you're using, and also depends for me on the context of which you're using,
right,
it. Like I would say you shouldn't be crass. You shouldn't be having crass things come out of your, mm-hmm, mouth. But yep, you can be crass using words that are perfectly acceptable,
right,
to
exactly
use in common company.
Yep.
The problem is that it's crass. If you slip and fell on your behind and you said damn, I don't care. You didn't try to damn someone to hell. It's just like this is the word that was in your,
right,
in your mouth. And you used it when you fell down. And so, like, I don't care. That stuff doesn't bother me. Even you get to the lower level swears, I'm like, I don't care. But if you use them for, like, a lot of those, which you may use kind of casually but not in its right context, it's less of a problem to me than if you're using – almost all swear words point to something crass. And if you're using in those terms, then, yeah, I think you have a problem and you shouldn't be speaking crassly like that.
Even if you're not speaking crassly but you're using those words, do you have any problem with using them in front of people that it would, like – going back to the stumbling block conversation?
Sure. Yep.
Like, yeah. That and that's one of the things that I wanted to call out too, is like if coarse language, even without crass thoughts or intent, if it's going to be a problem for someone and they can't see Jesus or the gospel move – because you're using those words, put them on the table and take, like, they're gone.
They're gone.
Like, yeah, yep, they don't control power here, and you can clean up your act. Like, it's fine. And, like, around you guys, I would say words that I wouldn't say around somebody that, like, I'm trying to show Jesus and they have no idea what's happening and, like, don't have a basis of understanding that, like, I'm like, hey, I'm just using these words because it's part of my vernacular. Like, it's just, but it's not meant to be rude. It's not meant to be mean against anybody. I'm not saying them in anger, not being crass with my thought process.
Yeah.
It's a filler word for me, and it's what I do.
Nor is it hypocritical. Just like I don't find it hypocritical for you to, like, if you enjoy alcohol and can use it responsibly, but choose not to use it in front of people who can't handle it, you're not being a hypocrite.
No.
Or two-faced. You're being intentional,
yes,
about how
and not
the
being
context,
a stumbling block.
Yes, about stuff that otherwise might impact them. So, yeah, I would say, like, sounds put together are not inherently coarse.
Right.
But I think you should watch context, and I think you should probably but like the meanings of some of these words, like they're straight up coarse and you shouldn't use them.
Yeah. Agreed.
I've had more, like, this is a fact too. I've had more meaningful conversations about who God is, like outside smoking with somebody. You know what I'm saying? Like that's just where the conversation,
smoke shack mentality.
And like there's a thing about going out there and not smoking, and hanging out at the smoke shack that's kind of lame. Like, you're no one wants to talk to you. No one wants to talk to the non-smoker at the smoke shack. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And like, I have the same vices.
I'm not much of a consistent smoker anymore. That's how I got on the chew. But but like, and no one wants to go out to the chew shack. So like, that's got unfortunate.
That's
but
a
like,
horrible
it was always a thing that, like, you know, I always heard people like beating themselves up over this thing. I'm like, you know what? I've always approached it where is it wrong? Like, is this just lazy? Where I'm like, look, I just need you to meet Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. And then, like, when you hear his voice, he'll tell you, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't have to go after your particular sin or be like, well, here's what you're doing is wrong. Now, if you're asking, I'll tell you know, how God feels about things, you know? But, like, when you meet him, right? He'll start worming in on this. He'll start taking away stuff you thought was solid. And then he'll start pointing at other things that you're like, this has got to go. And he's like, I don't care about that. You're making too big of a deal out of this.
Right.
Yeah, and not to like prescribe a particularly low bar, but I want you to take in this example. The Lord talks to Noah, and he says, hey, I need you to build a boat. And he does it. And he floods the earth. And the only man and his family are on this boat 40 days, 40 nights. He's seen the Lord, obviously, keep his word, do powerful things. What's the first thing he does when he gets off the boat?
Plants a vineyard.
Naked.
And then he does what?
Gets drunk.
And then he gets drunk.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly enough, the story doesn't focus on whether that Noah got drunk. The problem is what happened to him after he had gotten drunk.
Shame with his sons.
Right. It's the son's problem. It's the son's sin. Yeah. You notice it says grandkids that are cursed. It's that line of people, not Noah specifically. Should he have gotten drunk? No, but they don't really belabor the point. The problem is like what it exposed you to.
Right, exactly.
Because he had gotten drunk.
The repercussions
drunk.
Of that.
Yes. And so like it's a weakness. So again, like I'm cautious on, I don't, anything that otherwise doesn't put my mind in its right shape.
Yeah.
Lest I mistreat someone, lest I lower my defenses against something that otherwise might be a temptation to me. Like I would stay away from all that stuff for those particular reasons.
Yep.
But again, I don't think it's not hyper focusing on the fact that Noah got drunk. It just, what Noah's drunkenness allowed other people to have otherwise committed sinful acts in his, like, because he was not on his guard.
Yeah, right.
I don't think it's wrong. And I realize it's going to hit some of you guys the wrong way. Like how we're talking about this.
Yeah.
Like, it feels cavalier in our response to certain types of language. As a matter of fact, we've talked about this on the show, and I think like Dan would draw a firmer line.
Yes, right.
On some of this stuff, which I respect and understand, because I think, Mike, to your earlier point, like you could just as easily say, like, why are you snuggling up to any kind of line? Like,
right.
what does it matter? But I'm not sure that the Bible set a line to begin with that's different than what we just talked about. You're looking, like, oftentimes we're looking for a clear line so that we can call balls and strikes on things. I think a lot of the stuff is more contextual than that. Again, even think of the scenarios of which, just cultural backgrounds. And like, here's the other thing I'll say about it. The Holy Spirit will root it out.
Yeah.
If he wants it gone, he'll want it gone. People who faithfully follow Jesus and are listening and open to the Spirit working in their lives, he will root some things out. I was okay with – I know we've used this example before. Like, I was okay with downloading music from Napster until I wasn't.
Yeah.
And now it's distasteful to me. And now I won't do it, even if there was legitimate reason that, like, you could go online and do file sharing and get some music or something. Like, it feels like stealing to me. Same thing with sharing digital copies of books or stuff like that, where like the intention isn't that you should be able to have this in multiple places to listen to. I don't share. I'm against sharing Netflix accounts and stuff like that. Yeah. That's stealing to me. And like, I feel very strongly about it. Not like I'm not an advocate, I guess, but like, I feel very strongly about that. And then I could really care less if you use the A word. Long as you weren't using it in a coarse manner. Like, that doesn't hit me at all as a particular problem. Yeah. And I would, if the password sharing hadn't hit me, I'd probably be like, oh, well, I mean, save him a few bucks. What do I care? Well, Netflix doesn't need it.
Yeah.
Like, but I don't. I've been very strongly convicted of something like that and have not about some of the ways we're talking about language. So.
Hmm. Okay. We're saying tally forth, my good friend. And once again, I think all this is vetted out through personal Bible reading, praying, allowing your community to speak into it, right? Like, because like everyone has been on the other side of this where like people can't get through a sentence without dropping the F-bomb and you're like, this is just flat out distracting. Or like they drink for drunkenness or they spend all their money or like they put themselves in an early grave because they just wanted to smoke two packs a day,
yep.
Right? Like there is consequences if you follow this thing out. But like, at some point, you're worshiping these things, right?
Yeah,
like they are your idols, right? If your only coping mechanism is a chemical substance, and then you've replaced the Lord Jesus with something else, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, you got to be careful because addicts are a thing, including me, right? Like, I can come up with all kinds of ways why I should keep doing the thing I'm doing. You know, it makes perfect sense to me. Like, you tell me if my body's a temple, and I'm like, well, you find me a guy that locally sources his water and gets all the fluoride out of it before he drinks it, and then maybe we'll talk about temple. I don't care how many miles you ran today, Mr. Fluoride. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, like, if you want, sin will defend itself in a very ugly way. Yeah. And so like if you can look at yourself honestly and go, this is the sin defending itself. This is not me like defending good things, good and right things, you know. Yeah. But like I could just as easily have an addiction to orange juice where I just can't get enough of it. And like the world will accept that. They don't even care. And Jesus looks down and goes, that don't look like freedom. That looks like you're tied to OJ 24/7, having to plan out refrigerators and like how many containers you got. You go, that's not freedom. So I want to free you from that, even if the world goes, I don't care how much orange juice you drink.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Bhuva, did you have any examples?
I did.
But it left? Or you found
it? No, I got it.
Okay.
So my question of is it wrong has to do with prayer time.
Okay.
Because I find it difficult to just have focused, I'm doing nothing prayer time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if it's ADHD or whatever. I most of the time I find it very difficult to just sit in silence and pray. Now, I can do it. There are plenty of times I have done it, but it's definitely not my go-to. Mm-hmm. I'll throw on some music, or I will go for a drive, or I will start doing a thing. Like, I'll start doing chores while I'm praying. And I think that, like, not that it's holier to get stuff done while I'm praying, but it just allows me to, like, let my hands be busy doing dishes while my mind's focused on prayer. Is it wrong that that's my default? That, like, I have difficulty getting, like, knees on the ground and, like, head to the floor praying? And like, that very hyper-focused, this is reverence to Yahweh, stuff like that. Like, am I wrong for not really being able to do that naturally?
No. I don't think it's wrong to not be able to do it naturally. I do think it's a skill, not a talent. I think it takes effort and practice to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I have the same problem. I don't know how many times I've tried to do this where like I'm going to get better at praying and like my mind. It feels like I'm putting on a show. To be honest with you,
yeah, totally.
It feels like this does feel like play acting. Like I'm hypocriting myself because I'm like, I know I should do this. I think I believe that it's important and valuable. I'm going to listen to God. I'm like, I don't even know how. I'm listening right now. I don't expect God to say anything right now. I'm not demanding that He do anything. Am I just offering an hour of silence to Him?
Does He want it?
Does He even care?
Right.
Like, is this for me? Is this for me to feel holy? Or am I? Is this actually doing something? Because I also wouldn't think that God's not going to go, well, I got something that's super important to tell you as your dad, but you didn't spend 4 hours worth of silence this week.
You kept talking, so I didn't talk.
So you can't have it. Like, I don't think that's true either. But I do find something I think it is very valuable to be able to spend that kind of time.
Mm-hmm.
It is holy. It is purposeful. It is set apart. But I very much struggle with setting it apart. In ways to focus. Like, my mind rarely focuses on anything for an extended amount of time. I can't barely do anything without, like, reaching for my phone after 2.5 minutes or something.
Right.
And so, like, it's not I have a problem with Yahweh. I have a problem in general with focusing. So I do think it is not wrong. But I also – it goes to a conversation I was having with some high school kids. We were talking about how they communicate and their inclinations of their personality.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it is perfectly fine if you your personality inclination is introverted, but it is not an excuse to otherwise – be a jerk to people or not be aware of how people might be receiving the things that you're saying to mm-hmm. them. And so like, it's helpful to know your inclination, but it is not a prescription or an excuse to otherwise not change behavior.
Yeah.
And so I think I feel that's how I feel about my own ability to pray and focus is that like, I am not easily inclined to introspection and focus time and getting something powerful out of it, but I also don't practice it. And I have to because I don't take things in that way. I also don't look at the sun and go, God is good. Look at the sun today. Where my wife totally does that.
Yeah, I don't have difficulty with reverence. Like, I can totally see like holy ground kind of thing where I'm like, oh, this is a gigantic loving father that I'm going to respect and ascribe worth to in these moments. I just have difficulty being like, I'm going to be quiet for 20 minutes and just listen, or the whole like, hey, I have to like be very intentional and focused in these moments. Admittedly, outside of a prayer room, it's almost impossible for me to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, prayer rooms get me because, like, I'll walk in, I'll turn on the boombox of the Casting Crown CD from 2006, right? Like, that's what I can do, no problems, and then I can stare at a wall and write down names and pray through all this different stuff. But, like, outside of that, it's so difficult for me to, like, wake up in the morning, open up my blinds, look at the sunrise, and go, ah, this is the Lord's day, and then fall to my knees and pray about it.
Yeah. Some people take the world in like that. You know what's odd is that Paul takes the world in like that.
Yeah.
For being a super analytical dude, he's an argumentative dude.
Yep.
He's like a very bold and brave man. He also looks and goes, the glory of the Lord is everywhere.
Right.
How could you deny his existence?
Look at the masterpiece he painted for us this morning.
And I don't take it in.
I think that there's wisdom in both of the things that you're saying. But I think that there is an intentionality about it that you have to fight for. Do you know what I'm saying? And that it's probably worth fighting for. Like, not the sitting in silence for whatever an hour, right? Like, I don't know that he necessarily is asking that out of you. He might be, you know, but you'll know that.
Right.
But I think, like, it's the saying that, like, I want this to be your rhythm,
right,
for this time and not mine. You know, like, he knows intentionality. Like, he knows the posture of your heart, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I'll default. Like, if I get in there and I'm going to sit down and I want to pray for a while, like, I need help. And he knows that, right?
Yeah.
Like, other people's words will inspire me, including scripture,
yeah,
and including, like, a devotional thing you're reading or a song you've listened to, right? But if you're using those things to pass the time so you can say, I made the hour, he's not fooled.
Dang it.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're saying, like, I can't do this without this, you know, you're saying, if your intentionality is, God, I'm coming to meet with you, and this is the way I'm doing it. And, like, one of the things I would recommend that I'm not really good about this, but, like, I've watched it help a ton of people, is journaling. And the reason it's important and the reason it's helpful is because it slows everything down. It takes like your mind is running 80,000 miles a minute. But if you're forced to write down your prayers and write down the things that you would want to talk to him about,
dang,
the whole thing takes a little bit longer. And you can't quite think as fast as you were. Right. And you can't get distracted by the song so easy. And you can't get like, well, maybe I'll just read this thing in Philippians or whatever, and this will help. Like, it's okay to do that. Right. But if you're speeding through Philippians and say, I'm going to pull down this whole book today, and you're like, I'm going to read these first three verses three times. And then I'm going to pray about them. God, if there's something you want me to see on this thing, I'm going to read this again, you know? And then, like, I think it's skill, not talent, is right. Like, it's not just a skill so God's booming voice can come to you. It's a skill to slow your life down, mm-hmm, right? Like, you're not trying to get through it. You're trying to be there, you know? You're not trying to for the party to get over.
Right.
You're trying to enjoy the party, you know?
Well,
and
that's
so, like,
huge.
And I think it's hard. It's not easy because the rest of your life is not set up that way. In our culture, in our life, and everything is not set up that way. And so, like, the intentional part is like you leave your phone in another room.
Yeah.
And you don't get up to go check and see what time it is. You
right.
get up when you're done.
Yeah.
And maybe it's only 20 minutes, and you're like, oh, well, I don't have to be at work quite yet. Maybe I'll have some toast, you know, whatever. Or you get up and you're like, I'm 10 minutes late for work. But the point is that, like, you decided how you were going to run your day, not your day deciding you. And it's an intentional slowdown. And God doesn't have to be in the slow. He can just as easily be in the fast, right? But, like, if you it's basically saying all these worldly things, they need to pause for a minute. They need to slow down for a minute so I can hear the shepherd's voice, because there's a lot of shepherds talking.
That's a very interesting – two things hit me while you were talking through that. The first one was kind of that famous Socrates quote, the unexamined life is not worth living. But, like, you're right. If you don't stop and examine, like, that is the thing of which breeds intentionality. You can't be intentional if you're constantly moving. Like, – intentionality requires some level of stop and focus and decision making as to what am I intentionally going to do next based upon things that happen. I'm terrible at journaling. I've always been bad at it.
Yeah.
But, like, when I'm doing it, you're right. Like, it creates an introspection that allows me to assess something if you don't stop and examine and assess You can't. You don't even know where to take from it. You're just passing time.
Yeah,
and that's interesting. And so I think that gets to the second thing. I forgot the second thing. I thought maybe I'd come up with it as I was talking, but I forgot what the second thing was. What were you going to say, Booba?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just was going to say that that was super powerful to hear because when I'm in those moments where I want to be reverent and intentional about my time, I'm totally checking my clock. Like, I'm 100% like, okay, am I done with this yet so that I can move on to the next thing? Rarely ever am I living that moment going, Lord, this is your time. I am here with you, and I'm off, and I am, you've given me the free will to choose not to give you time. I'm here giving you this time. And I want this to be about you. I want this to be focused on you, and I want this to be fulfilling for me to go out from a place where I did hear the shepherd's voice. Like, my day is better because I'm guided to still waters by my shepherd. And I don't think I've ever been very good at doing that, of rather than just checking the box, going like, okay, I did that, now I'm done, move on to next task. I would like to take a step back, slow down, and look at this and go, no, this is where I want my time spent. Not just because I want to look like the kind of person that spends this time, but I want to actually benefit from the time I've spent with my father.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even if I think the key, if you're interested in like trying something like that, and like you can't replace, it's just like with your marriage, it's just like with your other relationships, you can't replace time with people. You right. can't replace relationship, right? And your relationship with him is like, it's celebrated with a lot of other people. But like the nitty gritty of it, like if you really want to hear his voice, if you're like, I don't ever hear from God, nothing ever comes and hits me, blah, 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 blah. Like, look, I'm going to just bet that you're not spending very much time with him at all, right? He's not a drive through. And so like, even when I said journaling, some of y'all would be like, okay, I'm going to type this up. That way I can go back and look at my journals and I can see what it, stop that. You're going to hand write it because it takes longer. It will slow you down. The point is not what you've written, not for you to go back and look at it later. It will be a beautiful gift when you've seen the work that God has done that you get to go back and look at it. But like, it will slow you down. The whole thing is to slow you down. Right now, like in your mind, you're like, my regular life, that's what I got to get back to. You should probably make sure that that's how you want to be living your life in the first place.
Yeah.
Is right. This giant, fast-paced, can't keep track of nothing, always hurried, never rested, full of anxiety, full of stress, and you're like, that's what you want to get back to? This writing things with a pen, is that's the weight to you? It's causing you trouble?
Right.
I mean, that doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah.
And you know it. And you know it doesn't.
Yeah. Hey, you're listening to Life from the Path. That we were just talking about things that, I don't know, is this wrong? Maybe you have an opinion on that and you want to share it with us. Get a hold of us on the Life from the Path, Bob Eisenhower complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. That's 515-517-0085. We'd love to hear either. Maybe you have an opinion on the things that we asked about, whether those were wrong or not, or maybe you have a question on your own, a situation you'd like us to opine upon. We'd love to be able to do that for you. And so hit us up on the Live from the Path complaint line. Let's either call or text. All right, let's hand out just a little bit of advice.
I didn't even look them up. Hold on. I wasn't even paying attention. I'm going to fire out the first one.
Okay. Hey, well, while he's working on that, let me remind you that if you want a great cup of coffee, go to Capanna's Coffee House in Ames.
Is that place still going?
No, it's been closed.
I was going to say, I didn't think that was open for a while.
It's been closed a long time. Also, get for all your print media, banners, t-shirts, and hats through On Purpose Promotions. That's onpurposepromotions.com, and you can get all your custom items open. That business also is no longer open.
That's no longer around.
That's been out of business. These are former advertisers of us. Finally, if you're looking for someone who's easy to work with and hard to beat, you're looking for Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower team.
Indeed.
He is indeed still in business, and you can go get a hold of Bob. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com, and Bob, I'm sure he'd love to help you buy or sell a house. And Mike and I have both used him, and he's just a wonderful fella. That's why he gets the honorary ownership of the complaint line, because he's just a straight-up awesome dude. And frankly, I will say, when there was very little justification to put any advertising money with Live from the Path, Bobby Eisenhower was there, and he kept us on the radio, and I'm not even sure I could prove that we did a lick of good for the poor man.
Nope.
But he was a good dude. He believed in the show and was willing to advertise with us when otherwise we were kind of scraping the barrel. So anyway, that's not the only nor a particularly compelling reason to use him for your real estate transaction. Yeah. You should do it because
he's also voted like the number one realtor.
Yeah,
he's just
an all around good dude.
Yeah. So that's why you should do it. But anyway, that's why we continue to give Bob the old complaint line because he's just good people.
Okay, ready?
Take Bob to Kapanis.
Dear Life from the Path, my wife and I have been teachers since 1999. Mm-hmm. We married in 2011. She became vegan in 2017. It helped her beat diabetes, which I love. I can't tell whether you love diabetes or you love that she beat it. That's phrase
Wilford
funny.
Brimley.
However, she's pure vegan for animal rights and listens to vegan podcasts all day long after teaching and on the weekends. I mean, all day, every day with earbuds in. I have to say, knock, knock, to even talk with her. Right now, she's listening to podcasts and messaging vegan people on social media and doesn't even realize I'm typing. I love my wife, but I can't escape the frustration of not being able to have a conversation with her about anything. We have no kids together, but I raised her son from 7 years old. He moved to live with his dad because of her obsession with work and veganism. I love her, but the fridge is filled with kale. Should I stay or should I go?
Okay, let's back away from your binary options here.
Right.
It's not just stay or go.
Not the clash.
So, like, reasonably, it doesn't matter whether it's veganism or exercise or Keanu Reeves or whatever, whatever the obsession is. It does feel like she's not being a good marriage partner. You can't be obsessive about things to the detriment of the relationship that you're supposed to be in. Like you have to care about what somebody else is thinking, feeling, talking about, wants to discuss with you. And so I get like obviously this is important to her because it represents some sort of what she believes to be a positive change in her life.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
that's great. That's fantastic. However, there is a balance to it where like you're still in a marriage relationship and. The question is, did he say that he's like tried? Besides the fact that like she's hyper focused on this, like we don't get a sense for like what he's tried to shake her out, not shake her out of it, but like I don't know, remind her that he's still there.
Yeah, no, it doesn't sound like there's been anything done there. I would also rarely ever have I seen in practice a marriage that is this distant from one another be this one sided. Like, rarely ever is it just, oh man, she became vegan and then I lost her entirely. And I did nothing in this and I have not pushed her away in any way or there's nothing that I'm doing. I'm so focused on my wife at all times and she just turns around and keeps talking to people on social media about veganism.
You think he's to blame in some way?
I don't think it's very likely at all that there's no... there's no fault on the other side of the aisle, if you will.
Okay.
And so I think that one of the things you can do is recognize that, like if you've lost your wife to veganism, only because that's the only thing she cares about, like animal rights, I can understand why all of those things are important to someone, especially if that led for you to be, able to kind of beat diabetes. That's a big deal. I bet there's more to it though. I'm wondering if you can take a step back, do some self-examination, perhaps go through some conversations before you felt like you completely lost your wife, and wonder if there was anything that you might have done to push her away. Mm. Or even, not necessarily like you're nefariously pushing her away or you've broken the marriage and it's all on you, but like this is a marriage. It works. It's a partnership. There's things that happen on both sides of this, and I think that maybe you might want to take a step back and see if there is anything. Because if you're the kind of person that you've found nothing you've done, either you really are in that very specific marriage where you've done nothing wrong and your wife just like fell in love with veganism and ran away.
Yep.
But more likely, you don't take ownership for anything. And like she probably brought stuff up to you as you were doing them or tried to be open, maybe not in the most healthy way. Nobody's perfect, but like, and you just missed that entirely. And now all you see is a marriage that's non-existent.
Yeah, it does feel like he's hyper-focused on the veganism. Like, hey, she's messaging her vegan friends or her friend Karen. Like, what is it?
Yeah, like, right, exactly.
What does it matter whether Karen's vegan or not? And so, like, maybe...
Her son left her because of her veganism.
I mean...
It's certainly possible.
She could be obsessive.
But, like, there's also a possibility that, like, she was a distant mother and, like, the father on the other side of that was giving that person more of what they needed, and the veganism was just like the spearhead of it. But that doesn't mean there's not more to the spear.
Why does it matter that they were teachers in 1999?
I don't know. No, we were teachers in 99. We were married 11 years later, and then my wife fell to veganism.
I don't understand this. It makes the man sound not credible to me, right? When you include a bunch of extraneous details that don't add.
Her favorite color is blue, and that reminds her of the vegan flag of joy.
I think maybe he was trying to point out that, like, whatever this vegan thing is kicked in what? What did he say, 2017?
Yeah.
So, like, they were together for, they knew each other for 12 years. She seemed normal. They got married. She was normal for 5 more years, and then all of a sudden,
nowhere,
the veganism is taking over.
She saw a documentary, and it just took her on.
Which is, I mean, like, totally. Maybe she's become a fierce advocate, and that's fine. So actually, here would be, like, legitimate advice. Here's what I would say is, where can you jump in and agree with her? You don't have to become a vegan, but if she's for the rights of the Scandinavian wombat or something because it relates to her veganism, could you support that? You should. Fine. If you're having trouble redirecting her back towards the things that you care about, or and you think this is taking up her whole mind, then go where she is and start there. See what you can join. Maybe cook a vegan meal now and again. Like, figure out.
Stop eating steak in her face.
Explore it. Actually, we were at I was at some kind of get together last week at this conference thing I was at, and they took us all out to this Brazilian steakhouse. People who were going to be,
yeah.
There. And so, you know, like the gauchos, where they bring the.
Was it Fogo de Chão or Texas de Brazil?
It was the Fogo de Chão. Okay. And so they're bringing all the stuff by, and there's this one dude who's like constantly going, nah, no, it's okay. He's a vegetarian. Like, I can't think of a worse situation.
What a war zone.
To go. Yeah, right? Like we did. Somebody should have asked. Are there any vegetarians? Maybe go, listen, dude, we're not going to do something else, but like, maybe you don't want to come.
Can I have some beans?
Because this gaucho deal.
I mean, they probably said we're going to a steakhouse, and he showed up. He was cool about it. He's got his own picadillo that he's gonna hold the line for, and he's not like, everyone changed for me. I'll just go with you.
That's
find
Sal. He was cool about it. Yeah. So, but anyway, so like, first of all, it may get her attention for you. Don't ignore her and don't fight about it. Like, figure out where you can snuggle up to the stuff that she's doing, and then I think it is fine to like casually start bringing to her attention to go, hey, since we focused on the wombat here on Thursday, why don't we go out and do something? I want to go to the local AAA baseball team game, or can we go bowling or something? And like, if you can just get 3 or 4 kind of steady examples where she's like, you're in for her and she's not in for you, and then you need to have a more frank conversation about it. But like, the problem is you build a bunch of stuff up in your mind,
right?
And the ledger tilts. As you're trying to, like, where you believe your spouse has offended you, you're like, they're always like this. Always is and nevers are like rarely correct. And everything is amplified in your mind. And so just write a few things down so that when you can have a reasonable conversation and go, look, I'm struggling because it feels like you're not interested in anything that I care about. Is this true? They're going to say no. They say, well, here's the situations we came up into, and like, you just didn't work. You didn't want to go bowling, and you wouldn't go with me to here. And I tried to join you in your thing, and this is why I think this way. How would you respond to that? And like, they're going to self – it's always been – like we talked about before, it's always better when people self-identify. She's going to end up self-identifying that, yes, she has a problem, and either she's going to have to admit, I'm a psycho vegan, and I don't care about our marriage, or something needs to change. But that's how I would approach it. Don't go after it fist after fist, man. Just join the wombats for a bit.
Segler says, tap your wife on the shoulder and ask her to remove her earbuds. When she does, give her an earful.
Oh, good one. Start a fight.
Tell her you love her, but you need a partner who's willing to be more of a companion than she has become. Tell her you shouldn't have to ask permission to talk to her because of her preoccupation, obsession with her podcasts. If you want... Oh, no. Yeah, sorry. Nope.
Did you lose it?
Yeah, it left.
It happens.
Okay,
it was going to be a bunch of trash anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, basically she's saying, listen, if you, you're going to have to tell her and then give her the option to start straightening up, and then you should start keeping some non-vegan food in the house and have her go to marriage counseling. If she doesn't, then we should have a different conversation.
Listen here. Sometimes...
Divorce her.
Like, the most abrasive path is rarely the right one. Like, the thing that happens with that, and I know why people take this path, is it makes you feel righteous.
Yeah.
Like, most people, when they're arguing with a close relation, whether it's spouse, boyfriend, girlfriend, parents, or whatever, like, their prime end is that they're heard. Here's the thing that I want to say. And oftentimes we use the most biting words because, like, you said the thing you wanted to say and, like, you got it out. But, like, it's very self-centered to look at the ends of a conversation as the primary means, the means of which you just want to get it out. You just want to relieve yourself of whatever weight you have by saying the thing that you want to say when you want to say it. There's no concern for the people around you for that. No right. concern for the permanence or health of the relationship. And so, like, I get that you're feeling rough, but do you want to resolve? Do you want her to know that you're mad, or do you want to improve your marriage? If you want her to know that you're mad, then tap her on the shoulder, take out the headphones, and give her an earful. If you want to improve your marriage, join the Wombat Club for a while. Figure out, make her some vegan meals like we talked about. And then I want you to bring it to her attention because it's important. Like, she doesn't just get to do what she wants. Like, you want a healthy marriage and you need to have the conversation, but you're going to get her attention in a kind and thoughtful way.
Yeah.
Tap agreed. Her on the shoulder and give her an earful. That's friggin' stupid. Stupid advice.
All right, ready? Last one. Dear Life from the Path, I recently received an evite to a surrogate baby shower. I was happy to attend. Each guest was asked to bring a box of diapers, our favorite children's book, and a donation to help cover the surrogate expenses. A written explanation of how expensive the surrogate process is was also included. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, when the couple started the surrogacy process, they were aware of how expensive it would be, and to ask the shower attendees to contribute to it is a little nervy. Was this proper etiquette?
Just give $5 if you don't want to give a lot. Here's the thing. The baby, what does she think the baby shower itself is? Do you think
right.
we're
the
not
diapers
the
is monetary?
Yeah, exactly. Like anything.
You knew you were going to have to buy diapers when you decided to have a kid. You shouldn't have to ask me to bring them.
Yeah. Or like, what do they call it when you buy a new house? Is it a home? It's not
it's
a home
shower.
Is it a home shower?
Yeah. House shower.
No, it is not.
It's called a hower.
Home warming. House warming.
House warming.
Yes.
House home shower. That's definitely
I knew
not
that
right.
wasn't right.
Yeah, they call it a house shower. It's a hower.
No one calls it a hower. Yeah. This is ridiculous.
It's a it's a baby warming
right.
party.
What is house warming except for, like, it's extra Christmas. It's like, we could buy all this crap, but maybe you want to buy it for us.
This is
wedding gifts,
the same with
baby
wedding shower.
Shower.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing. People get tooled up. Like, I've heard people get really offended that, like, I can't believe they're asking for this on their wedding registry. I'm like, did you just want to, like, the freedom to buy them whatever the heck you wanted? And then hopefully they liked it? Or, like, would you rather have them just say, here's what I want? And then you're mad because they were specific about what they wanted? That's dumb.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen someone buy a KitchenAid mixer other than for a wedding registry.
That's a bold gift, too.
Right.
That's probably the top shelf of whatever's on that list.
Right, exactly. Sorry, I know that was a random thing, but, like, I feel like
that's
I've never...
That's where I got mine?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I've never met someone that went, hey, I went and bought a KitchenAid stand mixer.
Yeah.
I hear people all the time say, I got married, and that's when we got ours.
That's right. I had an aunt who was single till she was 55, and she needed a mixer.
And then she found a man. Yeah, no, I think that, yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't think it is against etiquette to have this conversation or ask for that. I think that you are a very interesting person that this has offended you. And I usually try and go the path of like, oh, well, let me think about where you might be coming from and sit there and try and figure out how your past trauma made you the way that you are. But there's a good chance of this one. You're a schmuck.
Okay. This is going to sensitive
and I'm okay with
topic.
Coming across that way.
I'm going to try to minefield this thing, right? But like surrogacy is not – it's an option for the rich, right? Like
yeah. Yeah.
And generally, if you can't get pregnant, you just don't or you adopt. That's the way that works, right? He says, no, we're gonna do this very expensive thing, right? When you say, like, it does feel like a little bit that, like, you walked into this thing, you chose a route. You could have adopted a kid for sure, right? You chose a route that happens to be very expensive.
I mean, adoption's expensive.
Adoption is expensive. There's a lot of good tax credits for it, though. I suppose there's some for surrogacy, too. I think the way this woman is looking at it is basically saying, you had other options. You picked the most expensive one.
And now you want $20.
Now you want me to pay for it, right? As you included a guilt note and showed me how expensive it was.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, it kind of depends on the contents of the note. Like, if you made it sound, hey, would you give to us because this is super expensive and we're going to be in a bind. Like, if there's anything about that wasn't like, hey, you know, in lieu of bringing an extra gift, if you'd like to donate money towards the cost of the surrogacy, yeah. It would be helpful. That's totally fine. and pretty good. But like, if there was anything that made it,
is a pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Dang, I wanted to say something else, but I couldn't find it.
It's totally fine and pretty good. That's a catchphrase of like a 1995 radio DJ. That's totally fine and pretty good.
Okay, what I had
97.7 the bus.
I was gonna say that was pretty righteous, but then like I thought
it's not righteous.
There's nothing righteous about this. And so I couldn't,
it's just good.
I couldn't find the word I wanted. Okay. Anyway, so like it's fine, but like I wonder the contents of the note might sway me. Not
true.
To,
yeah.
I mean, you still don't have to give and whatever. Not everybody's a good note writer. Maybe they communicate poorly. You know what I'm saying?
I would say that's the vast majority. Or people are not good note writers and communicate poorly.
Totally.
That's why Dear Life from the Path exists.
Yeah, yes. So, you know, one of the things I would always tell my kids was like, if we're going to argue in our house, I want you to presume the best of what someone just said.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care what they actually said. I want you to think about it and go, what are they trying to say if they were in their best mind right now? And then just presume it's that. So that we don't like get people tied up on words and situations. And so they're looking at it and going, circus is expensive, as opposed to like some knickknack you bought that you remember from your childhood. If you want to give us $30 to help us towards the cost, that's probably the right way to think about it. And you should probably just do both.
Instead of 11 copies of Oh, the Places You'll Go, we got a little bit of money towards the surrogacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And like, obviously, you know, like insurance covers a lot of a natural baby birth, and there's a lot of organizations that will help with adoptions. And maybe surrogacy is not that as much supported, right? So, like, they're like, look, this is going to put us in the financial straits, but we're doing this. This is what we're going to do. And, like, if you love them, then, like, I don't see any reason why you should be against supporting them in doing it.
No, I think that's fair.
So the question was this proper etiquette? Segular says, no. Soliciting the donation was over the top. I can't help but wonder how many invitees declined the invitation because of it. To ask for money was tacky.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that's my big concern. I don't want people to think I'm tacky.
Bring me diapers, but don't bring me extra cash.
Right, here's things. There's something for your kid's butt.
Right.
Or here's $20.
Yeah.
Also, you're going to use them size zeros for literally 3 days. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're going to have people bring diapers, you should assign sizes because them size zeros, that kid's out of that thing within 3 days, and then you're like, we're on to the ones, and now we have like 45 size zeros hanging around.
Yeah, the diapers are the type of thing. Unless you're getting like reusable diapers, like the cloth diapers, I would say that like diapers as a thing in a shower, is you get that for first-time parents, and that's only because as a first-time parent, you don't know any better. It's like someone getting you a loaf of bread. You're like, I mean, okay, but I can buy my own bread. I could get my loaves of bread. You know what I could really use? It's like a bunch of bottles or something to sanitize the bottles or, again, like that kind of thing. And so I don't even think these are good options. You should upscale your baby gift.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What are you thinking about giving now that I've said that, Booba?
I don't know.
I've always given just cash. Like, I just go, here's the deal. Like, you know more about what you need than I do. Everybody's going to give you the thing that they think is the most important thing for your baby.
Like
but
Ben.
Like Ben. Yeah. He's going to give you a loaf of bread and go, it's just like giving you diaper.
It's pretty good.
And they're like, sweet. 99 cents worth of bread is the exact same thing as $35 worth of diapers.
It's the same.
You cheap schmo.
Here's the thing. You go through so many diapers. And, like, again, it just doesn't feel, stand out.
It's just like slices of toast.
Well, the gift is not to make you seem like a great gift giver.
No.
You're supposed to be trying to be helpful.
Yeah, it's actually, a lot of the times I'll wait until a little bit into it and I'll just be like, hey, tell me what you didn't get.
Jell-O.
Yeah, they usually say Jell-O.
Jell-O pudding.
or say the thing that you wanted to get, but like you didn't want to tell anybody else you wanted to get because it seemed way too expensive.
Pudding
Let me
pop.
Give you $50 towards a car seat that you really want for your kid.
Yeah. Yeah, expensive $250 car seat. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Like instead of giving you the thing that like, exactly, the size zero diapers that you're going to be out of in 3 days, let me know what you wanted to get that you just don't have enough cash for. And let me know
here's the thing, though. First-time parents are like first-time or like newly married couples. They're kind of hard to get along with.
Yeah.
Right? They have this expectation of how they're going to raise their kid. They're like, I got to have this $250 car seat. And you're like, my kids literally rode around on $25 death-defying seats, and they seem to be doing okay. Like, I think we should scale down the baby bag that we picked out that's $300.
Okay, you're like, that's true.
It's outrageous.
I'll give money towards an expensive car seat, admittedly, but, like, if it's like a, hey, I got the baby Bongiorno, or whatever it is, the baby Bjorn, that's $185, and we're going to use it for the next 3 months, and then I'm going to sell it on Facebook Marketplace for two-thirds of what you gave me of it.
No. Yeah.
Well, that means that you should have just picked it up for two-thirds.
Right, exactly. Go to Facebook Marketplace. There's parents giving them away.
You're listening live for The Path. Thanks for hanging out with us this week. We really do appreciate it. I think we ran the gamut. You want to talk about sneezes. You want to talk about handshaking an old man. Things where you're like, I can't believe those fellas claim to follow Jesus and think it's okay to do, I don't know, 5 or 10 different things that you think is probably wrong. Also, we talked about what is your church, what gets them excited? I don't know, just maybe something to think about. Let it run through your mind. What gets you personally excited? Should you be doing something with that if you're not already? Something to think about. All right, we're going to cut you loose. If you want any feedback, give us any feedback on the show. It's the Life and Path. Bob Eisler, Capate Line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. And we will see you when we see you. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Pretty good.